This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last week, President Bush asked Congress to approve a hotly contested legal strategy in the war on terror, military commissions to try terror suspects held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The president tried to create a system of tribunals years ago, but this summer, the Supreme Court ruled that he'd overstepped his authority and that his proposed commissions violated both the Constitution and international law. Now, the fate of terror suspects, that is, those charged with a crime, rests in the hands of a divided Congress, and the president upped the political stakes by transferring 14 high-ranking detainees to Guantanamo from secret CIA prisons. Instead of debating the trial of Osama bin Laden's driver, Congress will be talking about bringing the alleged mastermind of 9/11 to justice. And the president wants this authority before Congress leaves town to campaign for re-election. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist and the Republican leadership in the House of Representatives support the president. Democrats are opposed, and some influential Republican senators, including John Warner, John McCain, and Lindsey Graham, prefer a system closer to a military court-martial. Later in the program, New Yorker editor David Remnick on Bill Clinton's bid to save the world and send his wife to the White House. But first, the politics of detainees. If you have questions about the different methods proposed by Congress and the White House to try terror suspects, give us a call. Should Congress support the president's plan for military commissions, or do you prefer a more open legal procedure? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. We begin with Ron Elving, NPR's senior Washington editor, with us here in Studio 3A. Good to speak with you, Ron.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And, of course, we have a Republican-led Congress right now. But Republicans in the Senate, at least, have been divided on this issue of military commissions for some time now. Has that been changed by the government, by the president's speech last week, do you think?
Not yet. There does not yet seem to be a consensus in the Senate, as there is in the House, to essentially go along with the White House, go along with the administration, with its particular version of how a military commission ought to operate. And let's start with where there is agreement. There's agreement that these detainees who have been transferred to Guantanamo and others as well are people who have probable cause to be thought to be guilty of terrorism or something else that should be tried. There really isn't a group of people saying they shouldn't be tried. And there is agreement that we have the right to set up the rules for how we're going to do this. There's really nobody else that could do it for us that we could still call it an American process. We could, of course, turn them over to some sort of international court, and a lot of people in the world think that would be a good idea, but there's really not much sentiment for that in Congress. And there is also agreement that we should be able to bring forward the evidence that is most likely to convict them. But then you start to have disagreements as you get into some of the details of how this is going to be handled, and as you say, there are some influential senators, three of them often referred to now as the trio, who keep saying, look, this is not just about these 14 or right now 2006's suspects from overseas. This is a process that will come back to haunt us unless we do it in such a way that we would be willing to see our own military personnel subjected to similar procedures around the world in the future. So they're trying to take a broader view.
And one of the big disputes is basically the rules of evidence. Does the defendant get the right to hear all of the evidence that's presented against it?
Especially when in this particular case, much of that evidence may be classified, and which the federal government may not be, or the Bush administration may not be willing to share with the defendant or in open court, and may not even want to have summarized. They would rather it only be brought out in a closed session. And that has been essentially the key sticking point. I think that it's safe to say that no issue is more important than that in the minds of the senators, Warner, Graham and McCain. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is the one thing they care most about, because they're afraid that would be used against American military personnel. And remember, of course, Senator John McCain was himself a prisoner of war in Hanoi back in the 1960s and 1970s.
There are also disputes about the appeals process. And again, this goes back to the Supreme Court decision. The proposed tribunals that the president had talked about early on, where the appeal would go, if you were convicted, would go up the chain of military chain of command to the Secretary of Defense and then on to the President of the United States, all within the executive branch.
Yes, and I think they will come to an agreement on this, whether it should go into the civil courts, essentially, into the Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, or whether it should go to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. I think that will not prove to be one of the issues that cannot be resolved between these three senators and the White House and the House. But to set a little further the political table on this, if you will, the House where Duncan Hunter, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, is very much on board with the administration, we're going to see the Duncan Hunter version of this tomorrow, Wednesday, and then they're probably going to bring that out and vote on it on the House floor as soon as next week. So the House will be on board with the White House at that juncture, whereas the Senate, it's a little bit more unclear. The Warner McCain-Graham bill will probably be brought out sometime in the mid part of this week, today, tomorrow. We'll see some version of that. And they would very much like to have some kind of a committee action on that in the House, or excuse me, in the Senate Armed Services Committee, which Warner chairs, and then bring that to the floor of the Senate. But as you mentioned earlier, the Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist has already agreed to bring the White House version, matching up with the House, out on the floor on its own without any kind of committee action and insist on a vote on that. So that will mean procedurally that the trio will have to try to amend what the president wants on the floor, which would be a little tougher. But they may have the votes with the Democrats and perhaps as many as 9 Republicans on their side to actually do that. Mm-hmm. Then we'd have the Senate and the House on different pages.
Okay, a couple of things. One, to catch up, you're saying that there is going to be likely to be independent judicial review, just where exactly it is, whether it's in the armed in civilian courts or military courts, remains to be seen. The other question here is on the timing. And again, the president wants all this to happen now. But you're talking about an argument so far that's within the Republican Party. The Democrats, are they supporting the Warner, McCain, and Lindsey Graham bill?
Yes, they're quite grateful to have something that is an alternative to the president's proposal, which many of them have serious misgivings about, but which is not in and of itself a Democratic alternative. In other words, something that has a chance of having enough votes from the Republican side to actually prevail, at least in the Senate. Of course, that doesn't resolve the contradictions that they'll have with the House. It doesn't resolve the differences between the two chambers. That will have to be done by a conference committee between the two chambers, and then that would all have to come back to be voted on one more time before they actually get out of town in October.
And that sounds like a set of pretty high hurdles to pass before all of this can happen in a relatively limited time frame.
But they can do it if they really want to, and if the pressure from the White House remains as strong as we expect it to, and this is critical, if public opinion continues to support the idea that we should go forward with the White House's version of what military commissions, military tribunals should do.
And what evidence is there that public opinion does support that?
Well, I think it's safe to say that people want to see Khalid Sheikh Mohammed brought to justice. They want to see other people that they associate with 9/11 brought to justice. As long as the president can say the mastermind of 9/11, it's clear that people are going to support that idea. When you get down into such kinds of questions as who might be tried in the future, or let's say whether or not evidence that could have been adduced by means of torture can be admitted, when you get down to how do you prosecute the kind of abuse that we saw at Abu Ghraib, and some of the other issues that are around the edges of this particular controversy, then I think you get more of a division of public opinion. But on that essential question that the White House has been pressing home, shall we prosecute Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and these other people associated with 9/11, and should we do it in such a way that we can nail them, I think you're going to get a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. We're talking about the procedures now, proposed procedures to try detainees at Guantanamo Bay. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Paul. Paul's calling us from Key West in Florida. Paul, you there?
Yes. Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
What the press has not covered is that Bush's proposal to Congress would offer immunity from prosecution for war crimes or torture by the servicemen. And again, this has been downplayed, but everything that Bush says has an agenda to get what he wants, and everything he says about the others is exactly what he is. If he calls them Islamo-fascist, he's the fascist. And, for instance, in Afghanistan, it was mentioned just once in the news that Americans did not pull out to let NATO in. 11,000 additional American troops were sent into Afghanistan 2 months ago when NATO came in.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
why don't we stick to Congress and the Guantanamo detainees? There was a point there about immunity for CIA agents and others who have questioned, used what the president described as alternative methods on prisoners.
That's right. The administration wants whatever the Congress passes with respect to these issues to include a number of things that don't go directly to the trial of these immediate detainees. One of them is the proposal that no American personnel could be prosecuted for the way they may have abused or are alleged to have abused detainees, such as the Abu Ghraib situation. And that would be a question of a court applying a standard, quote, shocks the conscience. Mm. If the treatment shocks the conscience, then that could be prosecuted, but it has to meet that rather stiff test, that rather rigorous test. And as the caller suggests, they also want to immunize, as the caller says,
the main...
Go ahead.
They also want to immunize those American personnel who are involved in these interrogations so that somebody doesn't go after them for, as the president put it, doing their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring in a voice from Congress, Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He joins us now by phone from Washington. Senator, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Neil.
Do you think the president's call falls? As you're looking at the politics of this, are you anticipating votes on this in the coming weeks?
In terms of the Hamdan legislation and
indeed, yes,
tribunals, I think we will have votes. It right now appears that Senator McCain, Senator Warner, Senator Lindsey Graham, and others, along with Senator Kyle Levin, are working on a proposal. There was a thought perhaps we could even have a committee hearing today and deliberation on the bill. So it would seem to me that there is a significant possibility of votes in the next several weeks.
And so the time frame that the president proposed before Congress rises to go campaign for re-election, most of them, you think that's realistic?
Well, I think what he's done is begin a very deliberate debate discussion, and the question is, can we come to principled agreements and then move forward to debate on the floor? I don't see this as a simply, at least hope, not rushing to judgment. I think what's going on has been a very pretty careful review by the staff for several months after the Hamdan decision, and now...
Senator, can you stay with us? I'm afraid we have to take a short break.
Surely. Thank you.
Jack Reed, still with us on the line. Ron Elving, thanks very much, and we'll be back after the break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the politics of Guantanamo trials, whether Congress will give the president authority to set up military commissions to try suspected terrorists or propose plans of their own. In a few minutes, the legal implications of these differing proposals. Our guest right now is Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. We should point out that we did call several Republicans in Congress to appear on today's programs. They were not available. You're invited, of course, to join the conversation if you have questions about the different methods proposed to try terror suspects or the legal issues of military commissions. Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And Senator Reed, as you're looking at the differences between, I guess we've not seen a final version of what the president hopes his bill would be, nor have we seen a final version of what Senator Warner hopes his bill would look like.
Well, no, there are still proposals, discussions going on, but there's some basic points of disagreement. One is that the president's proposal would not allow both sides to see all the evidence. That seems to raise very fundamental questions about the fairness of any trial. Two, there's the issue of the use of hearsay testimony and some other evidentiary rules. One of, I think, the touchstones of this whole debate has to be not only will this be effective in prosecuting the detainees in Guantanamo, but if this method is used against Americans who are in custody of other powers, would we judge it to be fair? And I think in response to that, the military lawyers who testified just a few days ago, the Army, Air Force, and Marine lawyers, Navy lawyers, all essentially said that they would be very much more comfortable with the rules of procedure closer to what Senator Warner, McCain, and Lindsey Graham are talking about.
Mm-hmm. And the atmospherics of this certainly changed when the president transferred those high-ranking suspects to Guantanamo. Again, it's one thing to talk about this in the abstract. It's another to say, this is what we're going to use to try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, for example.
Well, the atmospherics changed, but I mean, certainly those individuals could have been transferred months ago in terms of this timing. So I think the timing was perhaps part of the just trying to build up the attention on this particular issue. But there's an important point that I think has to be emphasized is that many people feel that these rules will somehow allow someone like these infamous characters to walk out the door if the trial yields a not guilty verdict. But in fact, they can be detained for as long as they represent a threat to this country and to the world. What is the question here is how they can be punished and what means. And in that context, I think it gives more weight to those who argue for very fair, legitimate proceedings so that there's no question in the mind of anyone that these people are guilty and should be punished.
And what about the use of evidence collected under coercion?
Well, that, again, goes to the whole issue of what would we tolerate if an American was in this type of situation, custody of a foreign power. Would we sit by and say nothing if information that was a result from torture be used? I think we would protest mightily. And again, in order to detain these individuals, we can do that. This is a question of how we punish them, and this is also an issue of what signals do we send about what we stand for as a nation, as differentiated from terrorists. Do we stand for this notion of decency, fairness, or are we simply going to be expeditious and just punish for the sake of punishment?
Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Mark, and Mark's with us from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hi. I wondered what the political background was, particularly for Bill Frist, and I didn't realize whether he had the power to bring something to the floor without going through his own committee.
We had a slight dropout. I think he's talking, though, about the Senate Majority Leader, right? Bill Frist. Yes.
Well, there's a procedure called Rule 14 of the Senate, which essentially you can bring the bill up, and the majority leader has that power. It is also, of course, subject to the procedural votes that are necessary to consider any bill. So, you know, once the bill's up there for debate, or there has to be procedural votes of whether we'll cut off debate. So he could bring it up, but it is not a sure passage.
And what about his political motives? He's running for president.
Well, I'm sure there's several motivations, and I think problem not only he's running for president, but he's also trying to do the will of the president.
He's not the only senator running for president either.
Right. And so that might be at this moment more compelling than his plans for 2008.
All right. Mark, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Senator Reid, we'll let you go, but I wanted to ask you one more question. You're talking about, effectively, you say the United States is going to be able to hold these men as long as they represent a threat to the country, which is, let's say, just a very, very long time, if not forever. Are we really talking about the death penalty here? That could be the penalty for people who are convicted of very serious crimes under these procedures. Is that what we're discussing?
Well, if someone was essentially convicted on these procedures under certain crimes which the death penalty attaches, they could be, after due process, sentenced to death, and that sentence could be carried out. But that cannot be done unless there is a legitimate tribunal that will weigh the evidence and impose a punishment.
Senator Reid, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it. Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island and a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Questions remain about whether any of the proposals in Congress will survive a challenge in the courts if they're enacted by Congress and the president. We're going to hear two legal views. Abe Sofair was a legal advisor to the United States State Department under Presidents Ronald Reagan and Bush Sr. He's currently a senior fellow in foreign policy and national security affairs at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. He's with us from a studio on the campus at Stanford. And Mr. Sofair, nice of you to join us today.
Pleasure, Neil.
Also with us is David Price, a former JAG lawyer for the U.S. Navy, who is currently with the law firm McCormick & Associates. He joins us by phone from his office in Virginia Beach, and nice to have you on the program as well.
Thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here.
Abe Sofair, what do you think of the president's proposal? Does the White House have a stronger legal case if it has the same procedure the Supreme Court says was unconstitutional, but it's approved by Congress?
Well, that's a loaded question. They don't have the same procedure that was struck down by the court. This is a radically different proposal than what the president had wanted to do unilaterally. or under the claim of the general resolution. This is a very carefully thought out proposal. It is extremely detailed and very fair in most respects, and if not all. I'm distressed as I sit here and listen to people say, for example, that evidence as a result of torture can be admitted, that there are no appeals to the civil courts, things like that that are just completely wrong. The bill excludes evidence as a result of torture, and it does permit an appeal to the civil courts. So,
By the president's definition, torture has never been used.
Well, it's got nothing to do with the president's definition now. The president, in fact, has adopted in this bill the definition that I advanced, that Senator McCain adopted and put in the law, and he wants that definition of cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment put into this bill. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what Congress wanted. That's what everyone associated with the Torture Convention agreed was the intended meaning of that of those words. And now all of a sudden people are making a big deal out of it because the president has adopted it. Mm-hmm. It's absurd to me, frankly. And I don't think it does a service to the nation to be leaving so many things in the public's mind as uncertain when, in fact, they are certain. And these points have been accepted by the president, and this bill does protect people from those kind of problems.
As we understand it, the president's proposal, though, would create situations where the defendant might not hear all of the evidence introduced against him.
That's true. And I think people should think very carefully about requiring every single bit of evidence to be revealed to the defendant in these very special kinds of cases. First, let me tell you the general principle that we will be subjected to the same kind of rule in proceedings in foreign countries, and that represents reciprocity is a distortion of the meaning of reciprocity in international law. The people that we are trying here are people that have no sovereign country, that they are illegal combatants, and the people with whom we will have a reciprocity issue of that sort are states that have signed on to the Geneva Conventions and that are not going to deprive our troops of the same protections we will not deprive their soldiers of. So the reciprocity in international law is a reciprocity between states, and we are not going to deprive the soldiers of a state that don't qualify as people who are essentially terrorists of their rights. So mm-hmm. The reciprocity point is just baseless, utterly baseless.
David Price, do you agree?
Well, Neil, actually what I was thinking a little bit more about was when Mr. Sofair was talking about the people need to think long and hard before we disclose every piece of evidence to one of these accused individuals, and the distinction between disclosing every piece of evidence versus disclosing every piece of evidence that's going to be used against that person at a tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
And there clearly, in many cases, will be pieces of evidence that a government does not use in a trial against an accused person. But in terms of the evidence that is going to be used against that person in a tribunal, I think that Brigadier General Walker, the staff judge advocate for the Marine Corps, said it best in his testimony just the other day before Congress when he stated that he's not aware of any situation in the world where there's a system of jurisprudence recognized by civilized people where an individual can be tried without and convicted without seeing the evidence against him. And I don't think the United States needs to become the first in that scenario. So I'm very troubled by the prospect of taking someone to a tribunal, a court-martial, a commission, or whatever you want to call it, and using evidence against them that they are not permitted to have access to.
Based on your reading of the Hamdan decision, David Price, would you think that this would pass Supreme Court review?
I would hope not.
Would you think so, Abe Sofair?
I certainly think it will. When you read the law properly, you see that there is a very limited right in the government to ask the military judge who presides over these tribunals to consider deleting only those portions of a statement of a witness that might reveal some very sensitive piece of classified information. And that limited right, if it will not be within the power of the prosecutor or the president, it'll be within the power of the military judge in the commission. And, for example, if a defendant wants to know who was it that testified that I was at a critical meeting that called for the blowing up of, 3,000 Americans, and we have a source who tells us that he was at the meeting, you can tell that defendant that someone has said that you were at the meeting. You can tell his lawyer who that someone was. You can tell the military judge who that someone was. But why do you have to allow a presiding military judge to make a judgment? Is this man really being deprived of fairness by outing this? Finally, we've got a cooperating person right in the midst of Al-Qaeda, and we want to out him or basically release this person. It just doesn't make any sense to me to bind your hands in advance and not permit a fair-minded process to proceed.
Would not that, David Price, raise questions about being allowed to confront your accuser?
Well, Sofer, Neil, Mr. Sofer makes two points that need to be addressed. One is the proposed legislation does provide that the military defense counsel will have access to all classified information. However, for a civilian defense counsel who can only try to be involved in the prosecution of the case if they have obtained the necessary clearances, it provides that the civilian counsel can also be precluded from having access to that information. So that's a distinction that needs to be brought out. So it's really not making sure that the entire defense side has access to the information. Another point is that if you have a particular case where the disclosure of that type of information is so significant, we do not have the same speedy trial protections here that we would have in our either military court-martial system or through the federal civilian trials. So it is permissible for the government, if they need to delay the trial or this tribunal or commission for some period of time. It may also be possible that they could obtain the conviction without the disclosure of that particular piece or those pieces of information. Again, we're talking about the distinction between information that's going to be used to convict a person who may receive the death penalty. And I agree with Brigadier General Walker. We do not, as Americans, want to be the first system that endorses that as a method of prosecution.
We're talking about Guantanamo trials. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a listener involved in the conversation. This is Will. Will calling us from Baltimore, Maryland.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to correct a point Mr. Sofer just made about the Bush administration's plan and the use of coerced or testimony based on torture. And I just want to say that the Bush administration plan does actually allow for the use of coerced testimony as long as the judge in the tribunal rules that the evidence is probative.
Is that accurate?
Yes, there are two separate issues. One is the use of testimony after torture, which is inadmissible, and the other is the use of testimony after coercion, which is admissible only if the military judge concludes it's reliable.
So, for example, in other words, a detainee could be used based on, say, for example, waterboarding if you decide that's coercion rather than torture.
That's true. And there's nothing wrong with that. The use of testimony that's coerced, that isn't illegally coerced in our system of justice, is perfectly permitted
if it's reliable. That would be the first time an American court would allow the use of coerced testimony. How can coerced testimony be considered probative? It's coerced.
The word coerced has no definitive meaning as the word torture does.
Let's bring David Price in on this point.
I guess that we're back to what is the meaning of is, Neil. Another interesting aspect about that, however, is the proposed legislation would decriminalize the use of these coercive, cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment by our civilian interrogators, while at the same time making those offenses for which these accused individuals could be convicted. Making very different rules for those that we want to prosecute versus those that we want to obtain the coerced testimony from.
I think that's a very important point and a completely different point. It has nothing to do with the fairness of the trials in these military tribunals. The Bush administration was wrong in adopting a meaning of inhumane, cruel, and degrading treatment that not only interpreted it consistent with our cruel and unusual clause, which this law does and which is perfectly appropriate, but refused to apply it overseas to our interrogators overseas. And that is a big mistake, and it exposed our people to criminal prosecution under our laws, and that is something that's very different from this the fairness proceeding.
Will, thanks very much for the call. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Also, New Yorker editor David Remnick on the life post-presidential of Bill Clinton. This is NPR News. Right now, we're talking about the proposed trials of terror suspects in Guantanamo Bay. Earlier in the program, we focused on the politics of this question. Right now, we're discussing the legal aspects of it with Abe Sofer, a one-time legal advisor to the U.S. Department of State under President Reagan and the first President Bush, and with David Price, a retired Navy JAG lawyer. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Les. Les calling us from Tampa, Florida.
Hello, right there.
Yes, you're on the air, Les. Go ahead, please.
Good. Well, and travel a lot, and you'll enjoy the program.
Thank
driving
you
down the road. The question I have retired Lieutenant Colonel Marine Corps father and also a retired warrant officer brother, Marine Corps. And we have these discussions a lot. And when you talk about Gitmo, go back to A Few Good Men, and you have the base scene when Jack Nicholson says you don't want to know the truth. What actually goes on, we tend to trust our government. That's great. But these guys, and earlier there was a mention of the signal that we're sending, the American way and due process. My proposal, my question is, what are we showing in the way of full disclosure, treatment of people, and suddenly, oh, yes, we do have these prisons. Oh, whoops, they are over there, yes. When we talk about due process, are we really trying to cover this up with military action in the midst of an undeclared war, quote-unquote, and what's the best way to show leadership in the right way to do things, and are we doing it right? And I'm going to throw that up and then get off the cell phone and let you guys talk about it. And I appreciate you letting me call in.
Okay, I'm just glad Murray Horowitz isn't here to tell you that you can't handle the truth, I think is the exact quote. But thanks for the call, Les.
Thank you very much. That's right.
Yes. David Price, you want to take a shot at that?
Les, Neil, thank you. Les, that's a great comment. And, you know, Neil, right before the break, a couple of things to kind of set the stage. One, the timing. The White House wants this through quickly because we know we've got midterm elections coming up in just a couple of months, and it's very possible that the composition of Congress is going to be very different after those elections. So the administration's best chance to get their proposal through is right now. But it's important to remember that these procedures, as you mentioned earlier in the show, they're not going to apply just to these fanatical 14 that are getting all the press right now, but they will apply to every detainee that we've got out there. And we do want to make sure we do it right the first time. And as Les was talking about, in terms of what we as a country stand for, our legal system is based on a presumption of innocence, not a presumption of guilt. We want to
That's in the law.
We actually have fair trials, trials that we would be comfortable with the entire world looking at and saying, this is the way the Americans do it, this is the way we want to do it. And while I believe that this proposal by the administration is clearly another step in the right direction, it's not quite where it needs to be.
Abe, so fair?
Well, a presumption of innocence is in the law. I don't know why are we using this kind of rhetoric against the administration when it has finally turned around and is doing the right thing.
Oh, exactly. I say this is a step in the right direction, Mr. Sofer, but I think we all should acknowledge that at the very outset, 5 years ago, that was not the presumption. And we have come to find through the release of a number of the detainees at Gitmo that just because they were rounded up doesn't mean that they were guilty. And the same thing is going to apply here. We should allow a person who is being convicted of an offense to see all the evidence being used against them.
Well, that's a very different point than a presumption of innocence. There is a presumption of innocence. The government does have the burden of proof, and the judge is allowed in a very extreme set of circumstances, potentially to allow the a piece of classified information be withheld.
Well,
I think
again,
that hardly undercuts the fairness of this proceeding.
Except the legislation permits that it's the secretary concerned who has classified the information to make the determinations as to whether or not the disclosure would be a jeopardized national security. And the problem is, over the 5 years, and I recognize this is a relatively broad statement, but over the 5 years, we've had to deal with weapons of mass destruction, indefinite detention, secret prisons, midnight flights, rendition, Abu Ghraib. There is a lack of trust among the American people. And
you know, you should have been a politician, not a lawyer, because you're using words to create an environment of distrust. Rendition has been an element of international law for thousands of years, not just dozens of years. People are given over to other states every year. Hundreds of people
That people can.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Why don't we have one at a time? Well, in fact, I think we're. Why don't we just leave it here and agree to disagree at least on this point? Because I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think what's fundamental. The administration did hurt its credibility by proceeding on the basis of a concept of executive power that is baseless in American history. We should have known that because George Washington tried to enforce the neutrality proclamation in the criminal courts, and it was struck down. Mm. We've known for a long time that the president is best off when he works with Congress. The president now has agreed that these people should be prosecuted in tribunals that are set up by Congress. We've had Australia, England, France, Israel, all these countries have set up these types of procedures, have given the power to detain and many other powers to the executive, and it's all done in a legally proper way. And I think that this is a big step forward. Congress should be constructive and cooperative and get a law this law is certainly fair as it is, but if there need to be a couple of additional changes, they should do that in a constructive, bipartisan way and get this process going so that it doesn't interfere with our ability to protect the American people.
Abe Sofair.
No disagreement with that, Mr. Sofair.
And Abe Sofair, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
Abe Sofair, a former legal advisor to the Department of State under Presidents Reagan and Bush Sr., and he joined us today from a studio at Stanford University, where he's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. David Price, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Neil.
David Price is a retired Navy JAG lawyer, currently with the law firm of McCormick and Associates, with us by phone from his office in Virginia Beach. When we come back, we'll be talking about Bill Clinton.